Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we speak with Dan DiRigo, the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer for MGM Mirage, on his recent promotion. DiRigo has been with MGM Mirage for many years, but just recently took over the CFO position from company president Jim Murren. In that role, DiRigo has learned from one of the best, so his efforts to explain how the company plans to diversify its revenue stream beyond the gaming industry will go smoothly, he hopes. He explains what recent investments from Dubai World and joint ventures with other non-gaming entities will keep MGM on the cutting edge of public companies in the gaming industry. He spoke with me from his offices at the Bellagio in December. Dan DiRigo, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's nice to finally meet you and talk about some of the things that are going on at MGM Mirage. You've been named CFO at an important time in the history of the company. Since you've been with them so long, there's really not a need to get up to speed. So what was the transition like?
Well, it's been interesting here at MGM Mirage. We're always keeping ourselves busy and finding new and exciting ways to grow our company. So there's pretty big shoes to fill that I'm walking into this role from our previous CFO President Jim Murren. So luckily he's right down the hall, as is Terry Lanny. So I've got some great mentors right down the hall. Transition wise, we've really kept a lot of our team in place and really kind of given additional responsibilities to a lot of folks around us. So we have an extraordinary deep bench here within our company, and that makes my life a lot easier during this important transition period. So we've got a lot of talent, a lot of bench strength, and it is an exciting time for our company.
Yeah, no question. One of the most exciting things is happening next week. The MGM Macau is opening. Tell us how that will impact your job and the company as a whole.
Well, it's been a while since we've been back on the international front. Mm-hmm. We were once operating a small casino in Darwin, Australia for a while, but MGM Grand Macau will be our foray back into the international gaming business, and we look forward to being there with our partner. It's an exciting project. Mm-hmm. I've been there half a dozen times already in the last few years. The market is exciting. It's growing. It's dynamic. And I think it's going to give us an opportunity to showcase what we've been able to showcase for many years here in Las Vegas, our management talent, our brands, and most of all, the physical plant and the experience we deliver to our customers here in Las Vegas will now be transported into the Macau market. Mm-hmm. So it's an exciting time.
It's a different kind of operating model, though. You've got the so many table games there. Certainly, mm-hmm. table games are the main part of the market. You've got the VIP business, which is very confusing to me. I don't know if you guys. I'm sure you guys have figured it out by now. But what kind of preparations have you made to enter that market?
Well, the market there in Macau is much like Las Vegas was, say, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Predominantly a casino driven model currently, but with the long term prospects of being more well rounded from mm-hmm. a resort experience. And you're right, the casino business is a little bit different than it is here in Las Vegas, and we know the business model there quite well. We've followed it for a long time, and we've used some of those types of programs here in Las Vegas and in other markets we've operated, like I said earlier, in Darwin, Australia, and other places around the country. So it is a little bit different than what we do here in Las Vegas, but we've got some great people on the ground. Bob Moon, our president there, has been with us for some 15 years, and he's overseeing that project, and he and his team have done a terrific job. But it is a little different, and we'll adapt. We have a local partner there who has been a tremendous partner in getting to know the cultural aspects, and that's been a great asset to have in that marketplace.
Yeah, no question. Being a CFO of a public company demands a solid relationship with Wall Street. How have you developed that relationship over the years?
Well, I think it's something that has taken time. Mm-hmm. I've been working under Jim Murren now for quite a bit of years since he's joined the company, and previous to that, he was on Wall Street for 14 years. So he and I have worked extremely well together and closely together, and that has helped me from a growth and personal standpoint, being able to kind of work with and understand Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it now for some, 9 or 10 years,
right.
And I think I have a pretty good rapport with the Wall Street community. The door and the phone's always open, mm-hmm. To all those folks, and we try to make ourselves available as much as mm-hmm. possible. And I think that's extremely helpful to them in giving them kind of. As much information as we can give them.
Sure.
And I think from a disclosure standpoint, mm-hmm. we provide them with an awful lot of information, and whether it's our earnings releases or SEC filings mm-hmm. or otherwise.
Has there been a kind of a different way you interact with them since these rules came up about how the analysts and the bankers interact? I understand they can't even sit in the same meeting with each other. That must be a little difficult to manage.
Well, it's new. It's mostly a lot on their side of the equation for them to manage and kind of follow the rules that are now in place for the Wall Street and the bank community and the banking side of the community. For us, it's changed quite a bit as well over the years with Regulation FD and what and how you can communicate to Wall Street. Especially myself, I like my job here, so I plan on keeping it for a long time. So we follow the rules pretty closely mm-hmm. here from a Reg FD standpoint, but it has changed over the years, mm-hmm. and disclosure is needs to be pretty widespread publicly, and so we try to adhere to all the rules as closely as possible.
Yeah, no question. MGM has a long history of joint ventures, from New York, New York, and Borgata to the City Center and now the new Kirzner development in Las Vegas. These seem to have been very few problems, and I just know from my own personal experience, partners are always not easy to deal with. How do you manage expectations to begin with, and then manage the results as they come forward?
Well, and we also have another partnership now with Dubai World and City
That's
Center
right, exactly. mm-hmm.
here in Las Vegas. So we've developed a pretty good rapport with our partners. Mm-hmm. I think like any partnership, it's like a marriage, and mm-hmm. there's always compromise, and there's always a little bit of give and take. Mm-hmm. In the partnerships, and I think when you look at how we approach these partnerships, they quite frankly, we don't know it all,
right.
So we do rely on our partners to bring in some of that expertise or some of that assistance in areas where maybe we don't have either the experience, the expertise, or quite frankly, we just don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the case of the Kirzner joint venture, that's going to be an exciting project mm-hmm. here on the north end of the Las Vegas Strip with both the Kirzner team and Dubai World. But that's probably a piece of land that MGM Mirage wouldn't get to for another 5 or 7
sure.
years. And by then, we'll have an exciting new resort built mm-hmm. on the property. So the Kirzner team's going to do all the heavy lifting on the design development. We have a great relationship with Sol Kirzner and his team. And I think that's going to translate into another spectacular product mm-hmm. on the Las Vegas Strip that is going to excite people for many years to come.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like any marriage, it takes a lot of work.
Right.
Sometimes it's not easy in these joint ventures, but I think we pick the right partners
mm-hmm.
Typically, and knock on wood, that's played out to be a good choice for us.
Mm-hmm. How is the responsibility negotiated when you start that? Are you involved in that, as CFO, or is that left to?
No, we play a significant role, mm-hmm. Whether it's myself in conjunction with our corporate team in general,
mm-hmm.
Our finance, accounting, and legal team plays a significant role in the negotiation and in the structuring process mm-hmm. of the joint ventures. So, so we have a seat at the table
mm-hmm.
with our other members of our negotiating team, development, our president and Terry as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we structure them that are reasonable and fair for mm-hmm. both sides,
mm-hmm.
and I think that that sets the stage from day one
mm-hmm.
on how the partnerships come together and mm-hmm. work well.
So the structure of a partnership is pretty much established before you even get into the ground.
I think the basis of the partnership is pretty much established up front. Mm-hmm. Everyone defines their roles up front, mm-hmm. knows their responsibilities, and I think then that provides kind of a clear avenue for mm-hmm. each of the partners to work under the umbrella of the partnership.
Mm-hmm. Okay. MGM Mirage's largest shareholder is Kirk Kerkorian. He's obviously someone who knows Wall Street better than anybody. Do you have any contact with him, and what have you learned from him?
Well, I've learned a great amount over my 12-year career with the company. Mm-hmm. He is one of our board members, and now my new role, I do attend the board meetings mm-hmm. as does he and the other members of our board of directors. So the tutelage and kind of the feedback over the years has been tremendous, and he predominantly leads by example, mm-hmm. and is very much an influence over the management team, and tries to keep us focused here at the company. And And I think that speaks volumes in terms mm-hmm. of how he conducts himself and how he mm-hmm. expects his management teams to conduct themselves.
Mm-hmm. I've heard Terry Lanney speak of the convergence of entertainment and gaming now for many years, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you have as well. For a long time, I think people thought it may be an entertainment company buying a gaming company like Disney or Universal mm-hmm. or something like that, but doesn't appear to be in the cards. And now it seems that you guys are developing into an entertainment company. How is that evolving?
Well, I'd never say never mm-hmm. on any of those fronts, obviously. But I think when you look at the broad spectrum of things that we deliver mm-hmm. on, I think we touch on a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. Under each of our roofs, we have retail. We have some of the best shows and entertainment of any company or of any city mm-hmm. In the world that we deliver on. So I think when you look at the Las Vegas customer and you look at the customers in a lot of our resorts and other markets, they're much more well-rounded today than they ever have been. They're not looking for just a true typical casino experience. Mm-hmm. They now are accustomed to and are now looking for nice spas, nice entertainment, five-star restaurants that they're looking for. So I think the shift now, when you look at our revenues overall, mm-hmm. Gaming revenues, for instance, in a building like Bellagio, are only roughly about 40% of the mm-hmm. overall mix today.
Right.
And so I think when you look at the little bit of the paradigm shift that has happened over the years, especially here in Las Vegas, the customer is a lot more well-rounded and now expects to be entertained in just about everything they do, mm-hmm. Whether it's the restaurants, the showrooms, or the casino floors. Mm-hmm. They're expecting a little bit of that entertainment flair mm-hmm. in everything we deliver.
Yeah.
Looking for the most informative weekly publication in the gaming industry? Subscribe to Global Gaming Business Weekly, the only electronic news magazine that brings the news of the gaming industry to your desktop every Monday morning. Global Gaming Business Weekly is a complete publication with information on the gaming industry in the U.S., Europe, Asia, and beyond. Read about the latest moves in Indian gaming, the updated research about problem gaming, the breaking news that will impact everyone in the gaming industry all in one publication. Global Gaming Business Weekly is read by all the top executives in the gaming industry before they start their work week. Shouldn't you? To subscribe, go to the Global Gaming Business website, www.ggbmagazine.com, click on the Global Gaming Business Weekly icon. Don't be the last to know. Read Global Gaming Business Weekly every Monday morning.
Another area you're going into is some non-traditional, non-gaming resorts with your partners in China, and I believe the Bai World is also mm-hmm. Involved with that. Is that something you feel comfortable getting into now, or is that part of the diversification of your revenue stream?
Well, I think, I see it as a natural progression. Mm-hmm. We have a deep management team. We have some of the most well-known and respected brands mm-hmm. around the world, and being able to take some of those brands and management expertise on the road a little bit, so to speak, and be in selective markets could have a very profound impact on the rest of our business as we expand internationally via Macau or with our Diutai relationship in mainland China. With a $3+ billion project that we've been asked and selected by the government of Abu Dhabi to help them design and construct an MGM Grand Resort in Abu Dhabi is a tremendous credit to what we've been able to accomplish here in Las Vegas and with the brand. But I think it could have a serious impact not only in cross-marketing opportunities and expanding the brand, but then also giving people the ability to come to Las Vegas or Macau or other markets we will be in and be able to introduce them to what we're able to deliver on from a customer experience.
So you think an MGM Grand in Dubai without gaming would drive people to an MGM Grand that has gaming in one of the other jurisdictions?
Well, I definitely think so. I think when you look at the power of the brand, most folks today don't even recognize us as a gaming company. Mm-hmm. They recognize us as an entertainment company.
Right.
And I think that will sell in any market that we take at, especially the MGM Grand brand, too. We may use other brands in some of these markets as we grow out that hospitality network. But the MGM Grand brand is very well known. Most people think we still make movies, but that used to be our old sister company.
Right.
And quite frankly, we don't care how they recognize or come in contact with the brand. The reality is that they know it, they have some familiarity with it, and we think that that'll be a significant bonus not only for us but for our partners that we team up with in these markets and help them bring to life these projects and provide the experience. The Abu Dhabi project is a good example. That will be very much like any other mixed-use project we'll look to build in any other market. The only thing it won't have is the casino experience. It's going to have a large arena, over 1,500 keys in the complex, restaurants, convention space, and will be very much like anything we would build today in Las Vegas, absent a casino. So I think the experience will be there, the entertainment, the excitement will be there, and it'll be fun to help people kind of develop and work with them in these markets.
Okay. And is this the model you plan to use with the agreement you signed with the Chinese company as well?
Yeah, with the Diutai State Guest House, we have a joint venture with our partners there, and are looking at a few different projects right now in a few of the different major cities throughout mainland China. But the model will be pretty much the same. It'll be a less capital intensive business for us. We'll do it on behalf of not only our partners with Diutai, but probably bring on other partners in mainland China to do some of these projects and work together with them. Some of them may own the land or some of them may be equity partners. But it'll definitely be a way, especially throughout mainland China, to introduce some of our brands and continue to grow our business.
Private equity buyouts have been a big trend in the gaming industry. Several of the larger gaming companies have gone through that acquisition process. And can you envision any circumstance where MGM Mirage, again, you said never is never, so you never say never. So is that a possibility here at some point?
Well, again, I think when you look at private equity that's come into our space, it's been something relatively new, although a few companies have been in it a little longer than others. I think it's something here to stay in our business. I'm not sure if it quite fits the mold and the objectives that we're looking to achieve. But I think as far as being in the space, it's going to be here to stay, and it's another new source of capital for the industry, which I think is a positive thing. And it was always one of those barriers of entry for private equity, which was kind of the regulations and the licensing process. And few people have kind of made it through that, so they've they've kind of cleared the path a little bit for others down the road. But I think when you look at it, it is something that'll be here to stay. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily sure it's the right thing for our company. Mm-hmm. But that's something that longer term will take care of itself. Yeah. Over time. And when we look at the direction we're heading, we kind of like the direction we're heading.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Continue to focus on our main core of business. Mm-hmm. Our hotel, casino, resorts. Find maybe joint venture opportunities and monetizing some of the land bank that we have both here in Las Vegas and Atlantic City, and finding other joint venture or other hospitality type of arrangements longer term to kind of continue to kind of grow the company. Mm-hmm. and expand the footprint and the brand reach.
Is there an advantage to operating as a private company without, you don't have to put out the quarterly reports? You still have to, obviously, are responsible to your investors, but in terms of the public disclosure and things of that nature, would that make your job easier?
Well, I think, when you look at it, the a couple of things that would, fall away, and well, for some of the folks that are going private, is mostly dealing with the Wall Street analysts. For most of the large public companies, especially in these buyout situations, they're still going to have large amounts of public debt, which still require 10-Qs and 10-Ks and SEC filings, and so they're still going to have a lot of that. The one communication that will probably fall off is their relationships with the Wall Street community. Mm-hmm. So I think, you still have a lot of responsibility to the financial community as a whole, especially when you still have public debt outstanding. Mm-hmm. So I think. I think the advantages are of staying a public company, I think, in my mind, outweigh those of being private. You're a lot more transparent when you're talking to maybe new jurisdictions or potential partners. Your company is clearly a lot more transparent in its reporting and what it discloses out to the public. And I think when you're talking to new partners or new jurisdictions, that's something that they like and they appreciate it. And we've had tremendous success as a public company, and I'm not sure there's a formula out there that says we should change that in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. I know there's certain semi-autonomous divisions within the company. How do you manage them when you bring them into the whole?
Well, we do give our property presidents and each of our properties a lot of autonomy. Mm-hmm. We do allow them to make a lot of their decisions. They're very talented men and women that run these buildings, and they're really the results that they produce really keep the rest of us employed, quite
sure.
frankly.
Right.
So they give us a lot of input in how they see their business and how they run their business, and we give them a lot of leeway. Mm-hmm. But we do kind of watch over from a corporate umbrella standpoint. Mm-hmm. We do have to kind of make some tough decisions as a management team as far as where capital is allocated. Mm-hmm. And where the focus will be. Sometimes we transition certain properties, and we have to kind of move that around. It's much like managing your children.
Mm-hmm.
Home. So you have to play to a lot of different individuals and personalities. And but I think we have some of the best management running these buildings. Mm-hmm. By a mile.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't trade any of them at all for anyone out there. Mm-hmm. So they all do a tremendous job, but there is a lot of oversight. Mm-hmm. We do give them a lot of autonomy. We don't want Bellagio, for instance, to be just like any other property that we
right.
have in our portfolio. Mm-hmm. So it is something that we give them some of that autonomy to kind of create their own individuality. Mm-hmm. And create their markets. There is some crossover in some of the markets that some of our properties mm-hmm. operate in. And those are kind of the areas that we help, whether it be through marketing efforts or other efforts, mm-hmm. to kind of help cross promote the properties as
mm-hmm.
a whole.
Okay, do you think that model works better than kind of the corporate buttoned up model, as we see some other gaming companies have? You have to adhere to a corporate standard, whereas your properties seem to have a real personality, each one of them.
Well, I don't think either model, one way or another, mm-hmm. is wrong or right.
Right.
I think two perfect examples are, MGM Mirage and Harrah's Entertainment. Mm-hmm. No two companies could be as dissimilar in their approach than our two companies in our little space that we have, and yet both have been extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily think one model works better than another model.
Mm-hmm.
I think we kind of prefer our approach. We like it. We're better at it.
Right.
We might not be able to run a Harrah's model as mm-hmm. effectively as the Harrah's team does,
right.
but we know our resort-based business model,
mm-hmm.
and that works pretty well for us.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it kind of gets back to what Mr. Kerkorian and Tracinda has always kind of, kept us in on, and that's focus.
Mm-hmm.
Stay focused,
right.
on what you know best and how best to deliver it, and the rest will take care of itself.
Okay, that makes sense. I just have one more question, and it's about Nevada. It's your home base, the company's home base. And it's obviously a huge element within the company. There's a current proposal to raise taxes on gaming to fund education in the state. A lot of opposition to that, obviously amongst the industry, but even outside of that. What impact would that have on corporate, on capital spending in the state if that went through?
Well, I think it'll have a severe impact,
mm-hmm.
Not only from what those of us that are here will have to, revisit and take a look at how we allocate capital within this state. I think what could be more impactful is the perception that others will have coming in to invest in the state. What the perception of Wall Street will be will change dramatically. Las Vegas has always been held at a higher level, per se, because of its regulatory environment, especially in the state of Nevada, than other markets where we have operated or where we do operate. So I think investors looking to come into Las Vegas will have a different view going forward, which that will hurt us in
mm-hmm.
the long run, and as well as the companies that operate here will be revisiting how they allocate capital,
mm-hmm.
and Wall Street will take a different view. Liquidity from the standpoint of investing in these projects will change, none of those things are good for this industry or this state
mm-hmm.
in the long run. I think when you look at our state, we would all acknowledge that we're a growing state,
mm-hmm.
and none of us deny that, and we know we have a lot of needs, whether it's medical, education, transportation,
mm-hmm.
The one request and the ask that we have is let's sit down and be reasonable about this and set out the long-term vision of the state, and we're not shy from sitting at the table with the rest of the business leaders here in the community and
mm-hmm.
finding a way that that is the right direction for the state on a longer term basis. I mean, I love living here.
Yes.
My children are being raised here.
Mm-hmm.
The community has been terrific to us, and so we just want to do what's right longer term for the state in general.
Well, Dan, thanks for joining us. It's been very insightful hearing about what's going on at MGM and your philosophies on the growth of the company. And, congratulations on the opening of MGM Macau next week.
Thank you.
We hope that you'll be able to parlay that into even more properties in Asia and bring more success to the company.
Well, we hope so. And I thank you for having me. And we look forward to having a long relationship for a long time here in the state and around the world.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for choosing the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn about any of the issues discussed on this show, go to our website at ggbmagazine.com or subscribe to the industry's most comprehensive newsletter, Global Gaming Business Weekly. We'll see you next week for another edition of the Global Gaming Business Podcast.